Samuel Beckett was among the 20th century's most influential writers and thinkers. An author, playwright, poet, and theater director, Beckett is perhaps best known for his play Waiting for Godot and was awarded the Nobel Prize for Literature in 1969. 5 years earlier, Samuel Beckett made a singular foray into cinema, writing and creating a short film simply titled Film. I'm Charles Horak, and you're listening to On Film. Samuel Beckett's film has been restored and released on Blu-ray, along with a companion work titled Not Film, an in-depth analysis of Beckett's film, life, and work, and a deep exploration of the nature of modernity and cinema. Ross Lipman oversaw the restoration of Beckett's film and is the creator of Not Film, and he joins me on the program today. Good morning, sir.
Good morning.
Nice to have you on the program. I have to admit, this is a bit of a challenge to talk about such a singularly visual work as Beckett's film on the radio. I'm wondering right off the bat if you could sort of describe the film and set up the premise for it before we get into the details of its making.
Absolutely. So Beckett's film is structured along the lines of an old silent film comedy, but of course with a traditionally Beckettian twist. The idea is that it's almost like a chase film wherein the person is being chased by the camera itself. Buster Keaton is the star of the movie, the great silent comedian Buster Keaton, but of course filmed many years later in the last years of his career. And much of the film consists of him running away from the camera or at least trying not to be seen, and the camera is trying to see him. For Beckett, I think this plays out as a meditation on the nature of film itself. What is film about? And so it takes the form of this silent comedy, and I guess you have to see the movie itself to find out how it ends. But,
right.
But that's what he's exploring.
Right, and the camera and the camera's eye is not just chasing. Sometimes it's stalking him. They're both captured in intimate spaces. There's really only three locations that the film takes place in, correct?
That's right, yes. There's an exterior, an apartment building stairwell, and then an apartment itself. And so when I say chasing, it's figurative in the sense that Keaton is trying to keep his back to the camera. Once you get into the interior, there's a little dance that unfolds for good 15 minutes or so, in which Keaton is going about his business in the apartment, and the camera keeps on trying to see him, and he tries to keep his back to the camera.
Right. It's an active dance that's happening here, and indeed we don't see Keaton's face until almost the very end of the film. So he's purposely turning himself always as the camera moves to keep his back to it. Was Beckett, he was obviously an avant-garde thinker and writer and really pushed theater and even a little television in extreme ways artistically, but was he a lover of film his life?
He actually was quite fascinated by film and wanted to explore filmmaking as a artistic pathway early in his career. He, in fact, wrote to Sergei Eisenstein to see if he could get into the VGIK film school in Moscow back in 1936, and that never worked out, and I suppose that we're all grateful for it because we might not have had the great theater and prose tradition from Beckett if he had gone along a cinematic path. Who knows what would have happened?
But by the time Beckett makes film in the early 60s, he's already recognized as one of the greats of avant-garde theater. So there would have been great expectation around the making, the creation of this film. How was it received?
The reception was not as glorious as one might expect. It befuddled a lot of people, and in fact, the early screenings, just due to circumstance as much as anything, were presented almost more as Buster Keaton programs than as Beckett programs. It premiered at the Venice Film Festival initially and then shortly after at the New York Festival. In both instances, it was part of a larger Keaton program. And so Keaton really was getting a lot of attention at that time. And that audience was, to some extent, disappointed in the sense that it really did not live up to the expectations of what a Buster Keaton comedy short might be.
Right.
Even though the film itself took the outer form of that, that's not really what it is, and it's, you know, it's not a laugh riot. There are a few decent gags within it, but that's really not ever what it was going to be, and so there was some initial disappointment there. And there's also some question as to whether this is really Beckett's best work or not. I think even Beckett himself said it wasn't. Nonetheless, it's kind of a fascinating work, which is what drove me to want to work on restoring it and investigating it in such detail in Not Film. There's really quite a bit there.
In your title, Not Film, listeners may think of it incorrectly, I think, as a making-of documentary, and certainly it does explore the actual making of Beckett's film and breaks down some of the historical context and background of the makers of the film, but it goes well beyond just the work itself to explore Beckett himself and all of the things that interested him and the philosophical underpinnings of what he was trying to accomplish in film, as well as broadening into a sort of a meta look at just the place of cinema and the role of images and how we our perception of images are shaped by the lens. Was that your original intent, or did that grow out of the beginning of research for how film came to be?
Well, I've been fascinated by Beckett's film since a young age, so these are questions that I had long been fascinated by. And I would say that these explorations were always part of my intent. The film, Not Film, the documentary on Beckett's film, is trying to, in some ways, serve two masters, because part of it is really trying to do exactly what you first mentioned, which is a making-of film. I really have a great love for that genre and a fascination with cinema. So there's some, you know, good old-fashioned storytelling, I hope, in just chronicling how Beckett and Keaton and their other amazing collaborators got the film made. But that was really probably never the only type of film I wanted to make there. I really did want to investigate what it was about. And so the other area in which I'm heavily invested with Not Film is the tradition of the essay film, such as the forms that were pioneered by people like Ziga Beritov and Chris Marker and many others later on. And so so on the one hand, there is the storytelling, but there is the investigation and analysis that is a major part of it as well. And there, I guess Not Film has its own dance going on between those two forms, just as film has the dance I mentioned between Keaton and camera.
In Beckett's story for it, he's exploring, there's only two characters in his story, E and O, as they got shortened to, one standing for I and the other is object. Keaton plays the object, and of course the camera itself is playing the I.
Right.
And there's a moment towards the end of the film where Keaton has successfully, perhaps he thinks, outwitted the eye and kept his back to it, kept his face from being seen, and he drifts asleep. And that's the first time we see him from the front, that his subconscious is now free, I guess, from the gaze. But when he awakes, it's a whole different matter. There's a complication for me there, maybe you can help resolve, which is I understand the intellectual approach and what Beckett is trying to do between creating an autonomous eye and an object which is being seen by this eye. But by placing someone as prominent as Buster Keaton in the place of the object, which brings with it all sorts of baggage for the viewer, and also the eye being a camera lens and also being our own voyeurism into that scene, did he find that it was just too complicated to use film as a medium to fully explore what he was trying to get at in his writing for the story?
Well, I think that a major part of film, Beckett's film, is really that it did have this, let's call it an intellectual scheme from the start. That was really the starting point, and Beckett elaborates on this quite specifically in the script itself. He's got very elaborate notes which accompany the script, which
and drawings and diagrams. And
yeah, diagrams. He quotes the Irish philosopher George Berkeley, and you really see him coming up with this intellectual structure on which the film revolves, around which the film revolves. And I think in the end, you can find in Beckett's correspondence that he never felt that he comfortably resolved that. He started with this, let's call it an intellectual scheme, and then there's the reality of getting the film made with Buster Keaton and the medium and the crew, and that in the end, the film's power lay in something beyond the original intention, that there's an eerie, evocative quality that one has on the screen. Perhaps it's partially Buster Keaton. I think a lot of it also has to do with the excellent cinematography by the extraordinary cinematographer Boris Kaufman. There's something that you get when watching it. It's almost a feel that goes beyond the original intention.
Yes.
And the original intention begins to wash away. So it's very interesting to people like ourselves who like to analyze film and think about authors' intents and how those intentions hit the pavement when you have to make the film in reality. But the end experience is what's most important, and that is something that the film managed to do. So you can really kind of watch it and let those questions go out of your mind in a way. I don't know that that's what Beckett originally intended, but even he himself, his letters indicate that he was resigning himself to that effect, that, okay, well, I had all this great intellectual scheming ahead of time, but in the end, it's a movie, and we've got to look at what's on the screen.
Now, I think your Not film beautifully unfolds all of that, the challenge between the purity of an idea and bringing it into the material world, in this case through film and the collaboration and the challenges there. And you even have some recordings of Beckett, which there's a wonderful one to him talking to Boris Kaufman, the cinematographer, where Kaufman finally says, you know, I understand what you're trying to do intuitively, but I'm not there rationally yet.
Right,
he's sort of, you know, somehow absorbing what Beckett is reaching for, but not quite sure how one technically pulls off the concept. And there's that tension in the film, and I think that's one of the things that makes it so fascinating to watch. In this day and age, I mean, you could look at Beckett's film from 1964 and say he was just so far ahead of his time. I came away wondering after watching Not Film what Beckett would make of our day to day, where we are in a world where everything our eyes and we are the objects. In most cases, we're filming ourselves now. It's ourselves creating ourselves through all of this media and the various tools we have now. And we have so internalized the notion that we are objects. Was Beckett just foreseeing this future age, or was he just so far ahead? And if he were here today, he'd be shaking his head saying, you know, I warned you.
Yeah, I think it's a little bit of both. You know, a lot of the questions raised in film are strikingly important today. This whole notion of being under the gaze of the camera, it's all, of course, transformed, but extremely relevant. We're all now used to being photographed from the moment of birth onward, and we're so used to having documenting every moment of our lives and being documented. So these notions of privacy, this, in some senses, they're almost foreign. A lot of, I think a lot of younger people today are used to having cameras on them so much that the notion of privacy is, you know, well, what's that? On the other hand, then you see some of the problems that unfold with social media, and you realize, well, just because it's happening more doesn't mean it's not relevant. In fact, it's extremely relevant because people don't know how to deal with it. And so you can really look back and see the origins, or not the origins, but a prototype of this social dynamic unfolding in Beckett's film way back in 1964.
Mm-hmm. As an aside, it's curious, too, from as you lay out in Not Film, that Samuel Beckett himself avoided most recordings of any kind, both audio and visual. which is really curious.
Yeah, I think that for me, I think we say this in Knopf film, that my sense is that he had both a great love for and fear of the camera. He did have that great fascination with cinema, as we know from his letters as far back as 1936, and yet in his life, he was camera-versant. And so, yeah, you see both of that unfold on the screen. Beckett is, in a way, both characters, the one who's trying to avoid the camera and the one who's trying to see everything. And so I think in that sense, it plays out as a interior monologue. But we should also mention that you're right to bring out the audio recordings, because a lot of the fascinating part of the story is Beckett's production methodology. As he tried to bring these ideas onto the screen, they recorded the production meetings between himself, the extraordinary director, Alan Schneider, and also the great cinematographer, Boris Kaufman. You hear them in dialogue trying to work these problems out, and it's a fascinating window into Beckett's production methodology.
Right, and apparently those recordings were made secretly.
Beckett later did learn about them, but they were Beckett probably never would have consented to allow them to be made. But Barney Rossett, the producer, the extraordinary publisher of Grove Press, which was the amazing publishing house that printed so many important works in the 1960s and was a hotbed and center for the counterculture, Barney recorded them, and then Beckett later did find out about the existence of the recordings, and then he did agree to have portions of them published in his lifetime. So we detail this, both the history of it and dive into some of the ethical questions about that in Knopf film.
Well, I'm certainly happy that not only did you restore film, but that you went on to make Knopf film, because having watched both recently, I come away with the sense that film is a stronger work of art for having not film exist in the world, so that the two work so beautifully together, and I think your film certainly elevates the Beckett film and my understanding of it, so I appreciate you making that, and I appreciate you coming on my program today.
Well, thank you so much. Yeah, it's been a real pleasure.
My guest today has been Ross Lipman. We've been discussing Samuel Beckett's 1964 film project, simply titled Film, and the new work, Not Film, an exhaustive dissection of the making of Beckett's film and an exploration of cinema's power and limits to objectify and shape our perception of ourselves and the world. Ross Lipman oversaw the restoration of Beckett's 1964 film and is the creator of Not Film. Both titles are available on Blu-ray from Milestone Films. And to learn more about these works, log on to milestonefilms.com. For more of my conversation with Ross Lipman about film and Not Film, log on to ktep.org. Thanks to Kimberly Garcia today for recording today's program. I'm Charles Horak. Thank you for listening to On Film.